This is Brewers Weekly. Here's Dominic Catronio.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome in Brewers Weekly. I'm Dom Catronio. Hey, the sun came up today. What did I tell you yesterday? Everything's going to be A-OK. For those of you listening live here on WTMJ, this is a taped version of Brewers Weekly this week because, hopefully the weather is cooperating as I speak, that we are finally playing the Pud Galvin Cup once again, the media versus front office softball game right now at American Family Field at Health Fair Field. So hopefully things are going well there. Hopefully no blown hammies, no torn ACLs, no elbow ligament damage, none of that sort of thing. That's why this week's episode is pre-recorded. So for those of you listening live here on WTMJ, we do have plenty of great content for you here on the way. For those of you listening on the podcast, well, it's no big deal to you. We've got Kurt Hogue joining us here in just a little bit, a taped conversation we had earlier this afternoon. Just talking ball, as simple as we put it. Spent 15 minutes with Kurt. Also want to spend a little bit of time analyzing what's ahead for the Brewers and the Phillies. That's going to come up in the next segment. And then we're also going to take a deep, long look at the NL Rookie of the Year race. I know I have said Jackson Churio deserves to be getting serious consideration. Jackson Merrill had himself an incredible night last night. We'll talk about him, too, and how this is all going to shake out in another award, too, that I want to talk about, the MVP award. So that's what's on the way. Real quick here at the top of the program, I just kind of want to close the book on what this last week has been for the Brewers. And it depends on how you want to look at things right now for the crew. Are you a glass half full type person, or are you a glass half empty? Y'all know me. If you've been listening to me this season, you know how I feel. I've always been a glass half full person. Now with 22 games to go, of course, it starts to get real fast all of the sudden, and you feel like, all right, well, every game matters. We gotta beat the Cardinals. We're supposed to beat the Cardinals. Oh my gosh. Okay, well, this is a simple scenario I give to you. What if the situation was reversed, right, where the Brewers started poorly against the Cardinals and then won late? All of a sudden, you're feeling great about this team. You're like, yeah, they're on fire. Oh, my gosh. They're not losing to the Cardinals. They won the season series. Things are feeling great. Now, you had already won the season series. Granted, you have lost the last two head-to-head series against the Cardinals, and you're done with them for the rest of the year. You still win 8-5 against them. Some folks might be thinking, oh, sky's falling. It's over. Here we go. Here comes the swoon. It's no big deal. But what if I told you, coming into play today here on this September 5th, the Brewers, over their last 30 games, they're 19-11. And that may not sound overly remarkable, but over these last 30 games, they are 19-11. That's the fifth best record in baseball for any team over their last 30. The only teams ahead of them, the Dodgers, no surprise, the Padres, white hot, the Diamondbacks, white hot, and the Cubs. That's it. Those are the only teams better than the Brewers over the last 30. They're one game better than the Phillies over the last 30. And yet they're still 2.5 games back right now as the Phillies play tonight. They're starting off a 4-game set with the Marlins. So no matter how bad you felt about these last two games, and two games, quite frankly, the Brewers know they should have won. I'm very comfortable in saying that. The Brewers should have absolutely won on Tuesday. And they had opportunities out the wazoo yesterday, and they couldn't get it done. They absolutely had the opportunities to win. They did not execute. Does that cause for alarm? That's up for the fans to decide. I'm not seeing a cause for panic with 22 games to go, but we'll talk about the offense a little bit later on in the program. But I know some folks overreacted to Elvis getting into the game on Tuesday, and we said our piece about Hobie Milner getting into the game yesterday. What really matters for the Brewers right now, as they enter games tonight, up 9 games in the division, really 10 games in the division because of the tiebreaker over the Cubs, and still a magic number of 13. The Brewers are bound for October in some way, shape, or form. And they're trying to make sure they know what personnel they want to roll into battle with and figure out who they want to use in what scenarios and when and where and how. So that's what's looming here for the Brewers. As for the Cubs, by the way, the Cubs are welcoming in the Yankees for a rare Wrigley Field series against the Yankees. As play starts today here in the National League, the one seed still the Dodgers. They're only a half game ahead of the Phillies right now. the Phillies, the 2 seed, and then the Brewers 2.5 back of the Phillies for the 3 seed. Right now, San Diego would host Arizona. They're clear by a half game. Granted, they still meet one more time the last week of the season. And currently, Atlanta is hanging on to a half game lead on the Mets. And those two teams will meet the last week of the season as well for that final wild card spot. The Cubs, still very much on the outside looking in, 4.5 games back in the wild card, and not holding the tiebreaker on either Atlanta or New York. So that's just a quick lay of the land here for the crew. I want to talk a little bit more about DL Hall coming up next, and then you'll also hear Kurt and I talk about DL a little bit later on in the program. So again, this is a taped version of Brewers Weekly. We appreciate you being with us. We're rolling on here on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ.
Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Welcome back. I'm Dominic Catronio. Brewers Weekly is taped this week here on WTMJ. So if you're in the text line, if you're in the phone banks, I apologize. Can't get it to you this week. We won't have another Brewers Weekly, actually, until the final Thursday of the regular season, which is also the Brewers' final off day, 3 weeks from tonight. So you can listen back for that one. But we've got you covered with Brewers extra innings virtually after almost every game for the rest of the season here. In fact, the Brewers only have one more midweek day game the rest of the year. That is their finale in Pittsburgh, but we still have a Brewers Weekly that night. So essentially, aside from the two Monday off days, we will have a piece of content every day from now until the end of the regular season right here in your podcast feeds or on WTMJ Live. It's Brewers All Access is the podcast feed if you're not familiar. I know some folks are going to be focused on the Packers here pretty soon. We'll be here with you, waiting for you to talk a little bit more about the Brewers as they march to October and get ready to go. I know I talked a little bit about DL Hall in yesterday's program with Jerry Augustine and reacting to his 4 shutout innings against the Cardinals with 6 strikeouts. But I had a chance to sort of comb over the numbers earlier this morning and find an assessment of, okay, what should they be doing with DL Hall? I know a lot of folks, including myself, were sort of surprised when Pat Murphy admitted, yeah, we're not going to just immediately go to a 6-man rotation just because DL Hall is here. He did clarify that Hall will probably open some games here coming up on this 13-in-a-row stretch. And it, to me, just kind of reading between the lines right now, I think it's pretty clear that they're going to skip at least one guy in this rotation coming up on this West Coast trip to set them up to pitch against the Phillies. Now, that's always sort of a coin flip, right? Guys get out of their rhythm and get out of their sort of normal day's rest and their normal routine, and you kind of wonder how they're going to react. And this is me just sort of speculating, and I know I'm not supposed to do that, but at the same time, when you have this luxury of multiple arms, okay, and you have the chance to use a DL Hall against the Phillies and show them something they haven't seen, or maybe you've got a chance to modify the rotation to put Freddie against the Phillies this go-around and see what you get out of him. I think that's something the Brewers should certainly, absolutely be considering right now. I wonder if they would avoid Colin Ray facing the Phillies. He did face them the last time when they were in Philly at the beginning of June, but the Brewers used an opener in front of him. I mean, the rotation at that time for that 3-game series, the Brewers had an opener in front of Bryce Wilson, an opener in front of Colin Ray, and then Aaron Ashby made a spot start up from AAA. He walked 5 batters and went 5 innings in that game and had a tough luck loss when the Brewers got shut out 2-0 by the Phils. I see the chance for the Brewers to instead throw maybe DL Hall, maybe throw Freddie Peralta, and then maybe throw Frankie Montas against the Phillies or Tobias Myers, see what they want to do and modify the rotation because of what DL Hall's been able to do. Because this is sort of the point of the season for DL where it's like, all right, you're going to get every opportunity to show us that you're the guy that the Brewers thought they were acquiring from the Corbin Burns trade. You look back at the velo in April, it was 92-93. His in-zone swing and miss rate was not very good. He wasn't getting a lot of chase. He was also falling behind in a ton of counts. Strikes were an issue for DL Hall in the first month of the season. He wasn't getting the same giddy up on his fastball. It was just, he was not the same pitcher. You fast forward to now, suddenly the fastball is sitting 95. You've heard me talk about vertical break and induced vertical break and how important that is for deception. It's a metric that we use to measure the ride and the life of a fastball. And he was popping above average numbers yesterday, even out of relief, popping 17s and 18s when league average is 15. I mean, it's a game of inches, right? Having a 2-3 difference in inches on the bat of where you think the ball is going to be and where it actually is the difference between a ball in the barrel and a ball that's popped up on the infield. That's very important for DL Hall. And the slider, having a little bit of a better movement profile, a little more command of that pitch. He doesn't even need the changeup, but the changeup was the focal point against the Reds last Friday. He didn't even need it against the Cardinals on Wednesday night. So I see a guy that the Brewers have been patient with, and injury was part of that too, but he's feeling and looking like himself again. The Brewers, with their scouting department, knowing what they were going to need to do with this Corbin Burnes trade, there is a lot of pressure on themselves to get this one right. And talking to folks within the Orioles organization, and all spoke glowingly about DL Hall, and that it's not so much a reflection of DL of, man, why couldn't he quite put it all together in Baltimore? Injuries are involved with that too, and maybe Baltimore's pitching development is just not the same as the Brewers' pitching development. I know Brewers fans, we sort of get spoiled by seeing how good the Brewers are at developing homegrown pitchers. Trust me, there are teams out there that are begging to figure out what the Brewers are doing so well. And you could say, oh yeah, it's biomechanics. Oh yeah, it's understanding the pitching lab. And look, everybody's got a pitching lab these days. Everybody, for the most part, has a biomechanics department. What you do with those, you need the people that can translate this. You need the people that can help enact change and help figure out what a guy needs to do to be better. And that's what the Brewers have been able to find and being able to tinker and being able to tweak. Look what they've done to Aaron Civale. Look what they've done to Frankie Montas. A couple of simple tweaks to their arsenal, and they've become effective arms for the Brewers. And DL Hall, I'm sitting here thinking, if he shoves here in the month of September, do you ride the hot hand? And let's say you're in a game two scenario. Let's say you lose game one and you're in the wild card series. You lose game one, and you're handing the ball, let's say, to Freddie Peralta. And Freddie goes two times through the order with a lot of contact. He's at like 90 pitches entering the sixth inning, and he's going to face the third time through the order. Why not hand the ball to DL Hall there and see what you get out of him? Or do you start Tobias Myers in a game three scenario with DL Hall ready to go immediately in the wings, given likely the opponent will load up lefties against Tobias, and then you bring in the lefty Hall to follow, and it's like a piggyback start with two completely different looks. I think these are all on the table right now for the Brewers as they figure out what DL's role will be in this final month of the season. Hope all that made sense. I'm enamored with what I saw these last two starts, because that's the guy I saw in spring training, and that I was like, oh my goodness, this is going to be an incredible year for this left-hander. With all that being said, let's shift gears. Let's talk a little ball with our friend from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Kurt Hoge joins the program up next on 620 WTMJ.
It's Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
All right, welcome back here on Brewers Weekly. Dominic Catronio with you. Brewers getting ready for the Rockies this weekend. 22 games to go. It is going to be over in the blink of an eye. I'm pleased to be joined by Kurt Hoge of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and a fellow podcaster and a great writer as well. Podcast is Microbrew with our friends at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And Kurt, I mean, you just had a trip down to Nashville. You've been watching this team the last few days. I just taking a 10,000 foot view of this club, like here we are talking on September 5th, and they're in first place. They're still in the hunt for the two seed and for a postseason bye. Has any of this sunk in yet? Like, have we actually realized what's happening in Milwaukee?
A little bit, but not entirely. And that's one of the beautiful things about a baseball season, is sometimes you don't realize what's going on till it's over. I did have some moments in Cincinnati on the last road trip wondering, like, holy cow, how is this team doing this? And yet, like, they are, and there's no denying it or no questioning the way they're going about it, too. I mean, they lead baseball in run differential right now, even after a bad week. So I don't think it's fully hit anyone yet, and that's kind of how baseball works, though.
In this final 22 games, like they're going to hit another rut like they're in right now, but they could also hit another great stretch like they were in right before it. And that's the volatility of this youth right now for the team. I guess going into last night's game and even to Tuesday's game, there were frustrations about bullpen usage. There were frustrations about what's going on with the back end of the bullpen right now. But to me, and Murph talked about this in yesterday's game, and I've talked about it a little bit today here on this show, the youth is showing. And you're seeing this team do things it wasn't doing earlier in the year. And we can talk about it being pressure. We can talk about it them pressing, whatever. But we have to kind of sit and remind ourselves, like, yeah, they're in this hunt for the first time ever. Seeing Joey Ortiz chase, that's not his MO. Seeing Rhys Hoskins chase, that's not his MO. And then he's not young, to be fair. But this team is reliant on its youth, the good and the bad parts of it.
Oh, 100%. We saw some good things from the youth in those games, too. I mean, the only guys really who were hitting in those, these last two losses were Bryce Terang and Jackson Churio. So it was just a lot of uncharacteristic at-bats from all up and down the lineup. William Contreras striking out with a runner at third and a chance to take the lead in the eighth inning in Wednesday night's game. But yeah, this, I mean, there have been instances this year in which they lose games, the at-bats are not great, and then Pat Murphy does point to the youth and wondering, you know, kind of how they're grappling with the moment. That's maybe one question to have for sure about this team going forward, because you know what? The lights are not going to get any less dim the rest of the way. In theory, this team is well built mentally between the ears for the playoffs. They've made it this far, with nobody expecting them to. A lot of that is like, they're not the most talented team. They find other ways to do it. So you would like to think that bodes well, but then there's also these moments of bad at bats in big spots for, you know, three out of the last four games. But I will say that was, that's more uncharacteristic of this team from what we've seen. Normally they turn it around pretty quickly the next night.
Yep. Kurt Hogue here on WTMJ Brewers Weekly rolling on here. Kurt, the thought of this team potentially being a two seed is exciting, but it's an uphill climb. And as Pat Murphy always says, he can't coast uphill. With 22 games to go, I am holding you to it for the lottery on the line. Does this team earn a two seed in the National League?
Oh man. I feel like I never get any of these right. When you put me on here on the spot, my gut says no, because the schedule ahead is pretty tough. It does include the Phillies, but they also don't have a tiebreak over the Phillies.
Yes.
They would have to sweep, correct? And
correct.
Then there'd be some other sort of tiebreak.
The next level would be the divisional record, which is pretty close now all of a sudden because of these two series losses to the Cardinals. But the next tiebreaker, which the Brewers currently have the lead in, is divisional tiebreaker.
Yeah, it's an uphill climb. The schedule does get pretty tough. And you do wonder at what point. I mean, we even saw it a little bit this week where they were managing workloads a little more. They could have gone harder to win Wednesday night's game than they did. They did go with Devin Williams in the ninth. Yoel Piam started the 10th, but they had a lot of guys that, you know, probably could. It wasn't like they'd pitched three straight days. McGill was one of those guys. Koenig, another one, and they didn't go to them. So maybe they take not the foot off the gas, but they are more conscientious of usage.
I think that's the head on it, because I agree. I think this team will be a three seed, which, again, isn't a bad thing. I know. I can guarantee, in fact, that the team wants the bye, and you got to win more games, obviously, to want the bye. But at the same time, it's like, it's not going to be for a lack of trying. I think they're going to come up just short of that second seed and earning that bye. They will have a say in that final week, though. I tell you what, getting to face the Mets, who are suddenly in this picture very much so. So not only will the Mets have something to play for, the Brewers will still want to show themselves and set themselves up properly, assuming they're leading the division at that point. But I agree with you. I just, it's going to be hard. And I said it on my show last night. If this team can just be somehow two games or less heading into that Philly series, if you can be within two games, then it's going to be interesting. But if you're more than that, it may not even be worth it to get to that tiebreaker.
Yeah. And the Phillies are playing really good ball now, too. They came back to earth for about a month there, and suddenly they look like they did early in the season again. The Dodgers are what, a couple
game and a half? They're clear. They got the tiebreaker. I'm not counting those chickens. Yeah.
That's I sort of feel like the Phillies are getting pretty close to that Dodgers territory. The first round bye would be great. The Brewers would have loved it last year. But I also think that there are some benefits to winning that first series. We've been doing this format for 2 years now, and the wild card teams that end up winning that round seem to go with the World Series. So there seems to be some sort of tangible benefit to like latching onto good playoff success. And then going on the road and making a run of it. We'll see if they're able to do it. But like I said, this is a team that has the fortitude between the ears, theoretically, to go on a run like that.
Yeah, National League team has not made it out. That has had the bye, has not made it to the CS yet in these 2 years. We'll have more with Kurt Hoge after this. You're listening to Brewers Weekly on 620 WTMJ.
This is Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Welcome back. I'm Dominic Catronio. Kurt Hoge is still with us for one more segment. Kurt, we talk about the bullpen, and Pat Murphy delivered the news on Tuesday that Brian Hudson was optioned to AAA. Now, we've explained it a couple of times over. What we've seen, and we have seen the usage of Brian Hudson be exorbitant and at times more than expected. This is not a reflection of his performance. It's more a reflection of you need to get right because you are on the playoff roster. Let's get you right once October rolls around.
Yeah, totally. It's an unfortunate part of baseball that it requires them optioning him to AAA to give him rest, but you know, they sort of tried the injured list thing to give him a little bit of a time off earlier, and the velo never fully came back. So maybe they're just, yeah, that's absolutely what they're trying to do, is they're trying to get this guy right, get the velo right, get the stuff right, get the mechanics right for the playoffs, because he is quite crucial to this bullpen, especially like the longer you go on in the playoffs. You're gonna need more and more arms, more depth. Now they do have two other left-handed options on top of Jared Koenig, who have come along nicely in Aaron Ashby and Deal Hall. So they do have some other options in there that certainly both seem like they're going to be on this playoff roster with how they have looked recently. But that takes a little bit of pressure off needing Brian Hudson to be the guy. But still, you want him throwing like he was earlier in the year rather than the last couple of weeks, last couple of months, even though the results have still been pretty good. The Brewers are saying something is off in his recovery and how the ball's coming out.
Well, let's talk about DL Hall, too, because the way he looked last night, I said it on the postgame show that, hey, this dude's going to play himself onto the playoff roster in a significant role. I don't know if he's going to be a traditional starter. The Brewers might use him in the fashion they used him last night, where let's say they're in a Game 3 scenario or they're in a must-win Game 2 scenario to force a Game 3. DL Hall might be the guy coming out if there's a need for length. You know, with given the first three starters that are maybe on the depth chart right now are all right-handed, to have a, you know, a lefty-heavy lineup perhaps, and then DL Hall coming in, like, ooh, this could be, and Ashby to follow him as well. You're suddenly having a dynamic multitude of lefties, which is something the Brewers haven't really had the last couple of postseasons.
Yeah, and DL's a little bit of a different lefty than the ones they have. The way his stuff looks right now, he's pitching well to both sides of the plate, and that means you can get that length out of him. And in the playoffs, who knows? Maybe he comes in the second inning in a game when you're down three, gives you a few innings. There's a lot of different ways to impact the club in the playoffs. They've got a lot of high leverage arms right now that are pitching really well. I don't think he's going to be like the eighth inning guy or anything like that, but the 27 outs, you got to get them, and each one is important. They don't have a lot of pitchers that are going to see the starting pitchers that are going to see the lineup three times through, heck, two times through, maybe even in some cases. So they'll have to piece together some outs, and it's starting to resemble a little bit of like what the idea was coming out of spring training, where you just have guys pitching here and there and everywhere. The only difference is that was impossible to hold together for 162 games, so they couldn't like optimize their depth and their staff in the way that would be best, but now they can.
It's going to be, I'm excited to watch DL Hall, because the guy that we saw last night was the guy that I saw in spring training and electric bullpens, and everyone's like, oh, what a find. Real quick, you talked about Aaron Ashby as well, and you kind of called your shot when you were down in Nashville when everyone was already, Rick Sweet coming up to you was like, have you seen Ashby? Have you seen this? And then I'm in Oakland, and I'm the only member of the regular beat there, and I walk in, and boom, there's Aaron Ashby. I'm like, oh, hello there, and you knew this was coming. I mean, to see this meteoric rise, this dude's going to get leverage innings in the postseason at this rate, barring something unforeseen, and what an incredible story it's been.
I said this to someone the other day in the press box. I think it was after his latest two scoreless inning outing. If I'm talking about the guys I trust the most right now in the bullpen, it's Devin Williams. And then it might be Aaron Ashby.
Mm.
He's commanding it. It's maybe the nastiest stuff in that bullpen right now. He can go multiple innings. So, yeah, what an incredible turnaround. Like a month and a half ago, he was throwing 93, 94, struggling, and now he's pumping 97, 98 with two disgusting breaking balls. Crazy.
It's amazing what the Brewers pitching lab can do. Pitching lab go Burr, right?
Yeah, maybe some more on the way. Maybe.
Maybe that's my last question. Well, again, lottery on the line here. Do we see A, just Mizorowski, B, just Yoho, C, both of them, or D, none of the above?
The whole time I have thought it's probably going to be just Mizorowski if it is anyone. And he certainly, this is just my opinion, he certainly seems to be big league ready right now. He has been for few weeks now with the way he's commanding the ball too. There's a couple of spots that might be opening up in this bullpen in the next few days, next week, depending on some performance here. Like, there are guys currently on this active roster that are probably not going to be on the playoff roster in the playoff bullpen. So why not give him a shot? That's my pitch. I still want to say it's going to be Mizorowski at some point, though. As time goes on, I feel less and less confident about them adding another arm to the mix late.
Yeah, especially a rookie arm, a converted position player, and everything that comes with Yoho. I mean, we'll see Yoho in spring training next year, and really excited to see if he can break camp. But this is a good problem to have that not many teams have this time of year, where you have too many arms to choose from. And man, I'm excited for these final 3 weeks. It's going to be hard. It's going to be at times painful, and there's a chance that they can pull off the impossible still. Who knows? But Kurt Hoge, you can find all of his coverage on Twitter, on the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and the podcast, The Micro Brew, that him and J.R. Radcliffe do a great, great job with. Kurt, appreciate your time. We'll see you this weekend and on the road the rest of the year, man.
Yes, sir. Thanks.
All right, Kurt Hoge here on WTMJ. We're back with more after this, talking a little bit more about the offense and what these last couple days meant right here on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ.
This is Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Talking a little offense, and then in the final segment, we'll talk a little bit of Rookie of the Year. Welcome back. I'm Dom Catronio. Taped version of Brewers Weekly this week. We're just do a quick little check-in here of the offense, how they rank amongst the league, what's gone on these last couple games for the Brewers. Now, it's the runners in scoring position is obviously the topic right now for the Brewers. And like, man, why couldn't they get a hit with runners in scoring position? Everyone's freaking out. Like, well, look, when we look at the overall season from the Brewers, they are still one of the best teams at baseball in producing with runners in scoring position. Their batting average, top five at .272. Their OPS, top two at .820. Their overall on-base percentage with runners in scoring position is still .355. They're one of only five teams to be over .350 for their on-base percentage with runners in scoring position. A couple of bad games is frustrating, I know, but you cannot erase what they've done to this point. They are a solid offense when it comes to runners in scoring position. The other thing, though, that we've talked about quite a bit this year is their lack of production with a runner on second and, you know, less than two outs or whatever when it comes to situational hitting. We can keep track of this stuff on the greatest website known to man, Baseball Reference. So the Brewers this season, with a runner on third, let's start here, with a runner on third and less than two outs, a situation where, now, let's say the infield is in, or you not necessarily always contact is all you need, but for the majority of the time, if you can get a ball out of the infield, you're going to score a run. The Brewers have had the fourth most opportunities in baseball with a runner on third and less than two outs. but they have only scored that runner the fourth fewest, lowest, the fourth lowest rate of scoring that runner. Again, they have the fourth most opportunities, but the fourth worst rate of scoring those opportunities in baseball. And the company they keep are not exactly elite offenses. The Mariners are in last. The White Sox second to last, so congrats to them. The Nationals third to last, then the Brewers. If you want to take solace, the Brewers are only one percentage point behind the Dodgers. Now, the Dodgers score their runs via home run. I'll continue with a runner on second and nobody out. How often do they advance that guy on second? Once again, the Brewers have the fifth most opportunities with a runner on second and nobody out. The amount of time, the rate that they have advanced that runner this season is the sixth worst in baseball. Again, fifth most opportunities, sixth worst rate of moving that runner over. That's why when we sit down and look at, oh my gosh, look at this two-out offense, look how great they are. Well, it's because they're not scoring in those traditional situational hitting moments. And that was especially true in these last two games against the Cardinals. And every offense is a little bit different each year. The Brewers' identity this year is how good they are with two strikes. Once again, the Brewers have scored the most runs in baseball at the start of play today with two outs. I'm not going to complain about it, to say the least. But at the same time, I would like to just see the run scored a little bit earlier, and maybe the inning will continue. I mean, you look at the eighth inning last night. After the home run from Eric Costa to tie the game at the bottom of the eighth, you get a double from Bryce Terang. And you're sitting here like, okay, go ahead, run, top of the order, let's get that guy home. Now, Churio moved him to third on a ground out. Would you have liked that ball to get out of the infield? Sure, but he got beat, and he hit a ground ball. You're not going to win every at-bat. They decided to go to the bench and go for William Contreras. He struck out, then you get an intentional walk, and then another strikeout. Not getting contact in those situations is what really burned the Brewers with a man on third and less than two outs. Got to get the ball in play, and the Brewers didn't. So that's what I'm going to look forward to in these final 3 weeks. Does that situational challenge flip for the Brewers? Do they find a way to score more often with a runner on second and nobody out, or a runner on third and less than two outs? Because if they start doing that, that's when this offense will be at its peak in its most lethal moment, where if they're producing in the traditional fashion, not just with two outs, this team can really make a run and get hot out of nowhere with 22 games to go. All right, up next, we're going to take a deep, long look at the Rookie of the Year and the race that it is right here after this on 620 WTMJ.
Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Okay, last segment of this taped version of Brewers Weekly. Thanks for joining us live here on WTMJ. If you're just hanging out with us in the podcast feed, welcome back. Tell your friends. We're really happy with what we got coming up here in the hopper for the Brewers stretch run. 22 games to go, with today being one of three remaining off days for the crew. They have another one this coming Monday, and then another one when they come back home against the Diamondbacks that Monday. That's the last off day of the season. Okay, Rookie of the Year. Let's be real for a few seconds. Then I want to talk a little MVP stuff on the back end of that. Rookie of the Year, if I had to guess right now and you tell me, Dom, you have a vote for Rookie of the Year. Congratulations, as a member of the Baseball Writers Association of America. Who are you going to vote for? Look, Churio's been incredible. There's still 3 weeks for him to fix this. Not fix it. That's the wrong phrasing. To continue to play great. But I cannot ignore what Jackson Merrill has done to this point in the season. He had another home run yesterday. Jackson Merrill is flirting with 300. He's hitting 294 at the start of play today. He's got a 500 slugging percentage as a 21-year-old. And you're going to see a lot of folks just tweet the boxes, especially Padres fans, of the Baseball Reference pre-made compare players, and you'll see all the categories that Merrill leads over Churio. And I get that. I have no qualms if Jackson Merrill wins Rookie of the Year over Jackson Churio. The hard conversation for everybody that is voting on this is who comes in second. Paul Skenes or Jackson Churio? Or even Shota Imanaga. Now, let me knock out Shota real quick here. And I've said this all season long. This is just sort of a bit of bad luck and maybe an unfair bias. But I have a really, really, really hard time calling a 30-year-old who's been pitching professionally in the Japanese League for years, since 2016, a rookie stateside. I just don't think that's fair. At the same time, Paul Skeens hasn't spent the whole season in the big leagues. But that's not necessarily his fault. The Pirates were purposely limiting his innings so that he could finish the year, in theory, if the Pirates don't shut him down. I was looking at the numbers just between Shota and Skeens. I think Skeens has surpassed Shota. And I know it's not exactly a hot take when you look at WAR, even with Shota starting the combined no-hitter on Wednesday night. I just look at it. In fewer innings, he's amassed nearly double the WAR. Furthermore, he has way more strikeouts in 40 fewer innings. He's got 13 more strikeouts in 40 fewer innings. Excuse me. Shota has 13 more strikeouts than Skeens. And Skeens has 40 fewer innings. That's how close he is to Shota to track him down. But the challenge here, Kinchurio, he's going to hit one more homer, and he'll be the youngest player ever to have a 2020 season. Can he, stay pace with Merrill? What if he gets on a hot home run binge and ends up with like 24, 25 homers and maybe surpasses Merrill in the home run total and makes it a little bit more difficult? It depends on how much longer Skeens throws. But to me, if my vote goes today, I would go Merrill 1, Churio 2, Skeens 3. That's how I would do it. It's going to be difficult for folks to differentiate between a position player that was terrible in the first 2 months and Skeens, who's been electric since he arrived. But that's what these final 3 weeks will be all about. And the last thing on the MVP front, I wonder how many Brewers are going to receive MVP votes. Adames, Churio, Contreras, will any of them get some love? I really wonder that. That's just my one little take to keep an eye out here at the end of the year. That's going to do it for my program here tonight. My thanks to you for listening, and if you're in the podcast feed, no big deal. You can listen to it if you're listening live in the podcast form at Brewers All Access. My thanks to our producer, Nate Rilling. I'm Dom Catronio. Until next time, keep on swinging.